केन्द्वाररारनुदिनं खलु सैव जुष्टा स्वाद्विक्रमाद्भवति तद्गदमूलान्त्री स्यात्
is.
The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. So this text 7 represents the stage called Ruchi, where the scale begins to tip in favor of spiritual activities. One begins to relish the activities of devotion more than any other activity. Any material activity becomes stale in comparison. But this, and Rupa Goswami is describing that the process is by chanting the holy name, which is the major activity for the devotees. Of all the angas of bhakti, the chanting is the most important thing, which brings about taste for other devotional activities. And the chanting is being focused here as the process to bring us through these different stages. And that's in connection with text 3, being enthusiastic, confident, and patient in one's chanting. Text 7 now gives the process by which we should advance and apply these different, you can say, attitudes which are described in text 3. And Rupa Goswami gives this explanation of this disease. It seems that this disease of jaundice was created by the Lord just to give this example, because it's so apropos, or it's so perfect in its application. Okay. Did anyone else not sign themselves? It's compared to the sugar candy. And ignorance is compared to the disease called jaundice. And when one has jaundice, he cannot taste anything sweet. This is the nature of the tongue becomes afflicted with a kind of ignorance, I guess you can say, or becomes callous to the sweet taste. In fact, the sweet taste, when you have jaundice, actually tastes bitter. Anything, if you eat sugar, it tastes very bad, very bitter. And oddly enough, in Ayurveda, the cure for jaundice is to eat sugar candy. And even more, you know, oddly enough, as you take this medicine and the disease gradually begins to subside, then the sweetness of the sugar candy becomes perceivable by the person. Gradually, little bit, tastes a little sweet, a little sweeter, like this. The person is actually recommended to take sugar candy, a big glass of it with water and some fennel, I think. And he drinks this and gradually begins to taste sweeter and sweeter. because his condition is getting better and better. So Rupa Goswami is using this perfect analogy to describe the material, or we can say spiritual, disease of the conditioned soul. All of us are in this conditioned state. Krishna bahiramukahana bhogavanchakari nigadasta mayatare jwapadiyadare. We have turned our face from Krishna. Krishna mulya se jeev anadir bahiramuk. We have, from the beginning of time, turned our face away from Krishna. We have forgotten him. And Atayeva Mayatare Deya Samsara Duk. Maya has given the samsara, the cycle of birth and death, as our suffering because of this turning away. And this is our original disease, that we don't like to hear anything about God. So everyone has a spiritual disease, and gradually by taking the process, it slowly begins to go away. Gradually one develops some attraction. Even in the very beginning of bhakti, the yadrichaya matkatado jatas sharas tuya puman. Rupa Goswami quotes from Uddhava Gita, when Krishna's speaking to Uddhava, describing what is the eligibility of a candidate for someone to take up the path of bhakti. And he says in the very beginning, he has, by some good fortune, yadrichaya mat katado jata shraddhas tuyapaman. He gets some shraddha, some faith and some attraction in hearing about me. So right there, right from the very beginning, this disease is being destroyed by the process of bhakti. And at the stage of nishtha, the person becomes very fixed in his devotion. He's very, very steady. But he still has these five obstacles described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurya Kadambini. And because the sadhaka who's struggling, he still has these obstacles, he still has these distractions, he cannot get ruchi because he's so distracted by everything else that's going on around him. He's not concentrating fully enough to actually get the taste. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes those five distractions. The first one is called laya.
Yeah, help if I write them down, probably.
He's sleeping. Very tired all the time. He's not getting any, juice, enlivenment from his bhajan, from his japa, from his meditation. So when he does these things, he feels very sleepy. And it comes in, he describes it in little detail, that there's a kind of progression, Like when you're doing your Gayatri, you're chanting, your Diksha mantras silently, maybe in your mind, Manasik style. So it's very easy to fall asleep at that time. Right? I remember chanting my Gayatri in the airport, after distributing books for a few hours, and we sit down and then maybe wake up a half an hour later. Something like this. It's like some of the longest Gayatri, probably on record, in the Guinness Book of World Records. Gayatri is the most difficult. And then japa, when you're actually doing, or when you're doing shravan, when you're hearing a lecture, in the Bhagavatam, especially in the back row against the wall, you know, people have a tendency to fall asleep when they're hearing. I said this is a great cure for those who cannot sleep. What is that disease called? Insomnia. Right? If you have insomnia, you should just hear the Bhagavatam. Makes you relaxed. Right? Because it,
There's a funny story,
when somebody's chanting, like in a kirtan, you don't usually see people falling asleep, but it may happen sometimes. I remember there was one devotee in the London temple, he was chanting his japa, and he was standing up chanting his japa, and suddenly we heard this sound, bam, and I turned around and we saw his, he just fell face forward, you know, right on his face, and he had blood all over his face. Everyone was shocked. And so chanting, of course kirtan generally don't fall asleep, they're jumping around.
Number one killer, you know.
Okay, that number two is vishepa, which means like distraction. There's some actual physical distraction and the person's mind becomes carried away. He sees someone walk by with a big plate of mahaprasadam, or he sees a beautiful lady walk past and he's chanting her japa. Becomes distracted. And then apratipati. I forget how it's spelled, something like that. And this means when one is causelessly distracted, then even when there's nothing there, his mind just kind of goes off on a, you know, vacation and starts wandering and thinking of so many things. Causeless distraction. No cause. No actual... It's everything's peaceful, but still the mind just becomes distracted. And then... Klashaya means previous bad habits or tendencies inherent within the person's character, like anger, greed, Klashaya. And then the last one is Rasaslat. It's just material taste. This one is distraction with cause. And this one is distraction without a cause. So, anyway, there's at least five different kinds. I'm sure maybe nowadays we could probably make a few new categories. Nowadays, when you're giving a lecture, someone just walks in the room and half of the room goes like that. And they just, that's just the nature of people. They can't concentrate. They see something and immediately, what's that? And something, oh, what's that? And, oh, the lights have on. Oh, who's there? Oh, there's a sound. And the mind is just, it just doesn't like to stay focused. This is the disease of the 20th century Kali Yuga Bhakta, especially. Because when we grew up, you know, we like to do five things at once. You know, watch television, sip on a Coca-Cola, smoke a cigarette, and then we got the stereo playing also, and we're listening to that, and we're on the telephone, so talking to our friend, we got a sandwich in the hand, and put the cigarette down, take a bite of the sandwich, a little drink of the soda, talking to the friend, oh, the television's going on. Person's senses. We don't feel satisfied unless we have at least three senses going on at the same time. Yeah, it's true. That's why, and then when we sit down and try to chant japa, and we just,
you know, we try to just chant on one thing, and the mind doesn't want just one thing. It wants this thing, second thing, and actually sometimes you have like these layers of thoughts, this one and then another one. Another three conversations going on in your mind and while you're chanting your chant. That's why when practicing bhakti yoga, it's advantageous to just do one thing at a time and not try to do two or more things at one time. Srila Prabhupada told Brahmananda Prabhu, who was the Maharaj at that time, that he said that we shouldn't even play a tape of bhajan or chanting while doing anything else. In other words, if you're going to listen to a bhajan tape or a kirtan tape, then you should do nothing else. You should just listen to that sound. Listen to the tape. And we shouldn't use it as a kind of background music for, you know, like when you're in a dentist's office, they play a little music in the back just to soothe your nerves. Something like this. If you want that, then you should play some shanai or some flute music or something like this. But we shouldn't use the holy name as a kind of background while we do while we're doing something else. And that it includes all different things. So it's better to do one thing at a time and concentrate. That's one practice which can help us so that when we chant our japa quality can improve. Because it's very difficult to concentrate. This is the number one offense in chanting is pramad, or inattention. And that is because of our nature. Our nature is to be inattentive because we want to do so many things at the same time. So all of these things gradually get the devotee serious. He'll be practicing to take care of these things, and then he will begin to concentrate. Because when it comes to nishta, then his sadhan becomes intense or concentrated. It is one of the two causes of bhava bhakti given by Rupa Goswami. One is the rigid execution of sadhana bhakti. And the second one is by the mercy of Krishna or his pure devotee. You can get bhava bhakti, love of God, in these two ways. And acharyas describe that they question what makes someone's sadhana rigid. It says rigid execution of sadhana bhakti. And they say that from the stage of nishta, the sadhana becomes rigid because distractions are no longer present. The person is able to concentrate. So concentration is very important. It's our, you know, Ashtanga yoga feature of bhakti yoga. That's why we have our chapter 6 in Bhagavad Gita to help us to concentrate. Bhakti yoga contains the components of all of the yoga systems. So in our practice, the concentration is very, very important. And it can bring us to ruchi. Because inherent within the holy name and within all of the bhajans and the Bhagavatam, etc., etc., is bliss. There's the Ladini Shakti is kind of, you know, sitting there waiting for us to stumble upon her. But because we're so distracted, we can't penetrate and tap into that pleasure. So therefore, concentration is important. There's also described five kleshas which are destroyed by bhakti. I will also write these down.
Push yourself determinedly forward in a rigid method. So the whole idea of this verse is that, and Prabhupada's commentary is based on the word adara. If you look in this verse, the word adara means carefully. So by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within the tongue. Because acharyas have explained that before the stage of ruchi, we don't have a taste. We don't have a strong taste. So therefore, we have to be very careful and attentive. And we have to push ourselves. And we have to determine ourselves that to be attentive, to listen. This is the main thing. It's very important. We have to like push our, it's like push starting a car in a way. You know? It's very hard, especially if it's uphill. You know? So Kanishtha is like that, pushing a car uphill. And then, you know, and then when it comes to the Madhyam stage, it's like pushing the car. Krishna, Krishna, Hari, Hari. You know, he doesn't have to chant like that because he's actually getting a taste. He enjoys it. He's relishing when he's chanting like that. It's very nice. He doesn't have to do this anymore. And then what to speak out of sakti, it's even more. And then he starts going like this. Then the car starts like going down the hill. Right? At the Uttam stage. No pushing necessary. It's automatic pilot. Before ruchi, there has to be this very strong attentiveness, careful adara. That's really, there's no other way. But there, we can talk about chanting a little bit at the end, Henry, if you get some time. So there's, as one does bhakti, there's five kleshas which are destroyed. Avidya just means to ignorance, considering that which is impermanent to be permanent, that which is not the self to be the self, that which is miserable to be happiness. This is avidya. And asmita means false ego. I mean mine, I'm this body, etc. Feel sense pleasures. Dvesha means hatred or envy, avoiding pain and discomfort. And avinivesha is a very fundamental thing. It's like instinctively clinging, instinctively, inherently, clinging to bodily enjoyments, thinking this is the only source of pleasure, not being aware of any other pleasure, so instinctively clinging to bodily pleasures for my enjoyment, and having clinging to material enjoyments with a fear that death will stop my enjoyment because my body will be finished. And how will I enjoy? That's why a lot of these movies like Sex After Death become very popular. So people are very curious about this. Will they be able to enjoy after death? I was in the Philippines, I was in Manila once, and I saw a huge queue. Thousands of people in front of a cinema. And I thought, what's going on? What is this, a new movie? And then I saw, yes. I came around the corner. Is there sex after death? And I thought, oh, that's why everyone's so interested in this thing. And obviously there was such a movie in India too, during Prabhupada's time, because Prabhupada, he gave a lecture and he mentioned there was a movie in the 70s also, I think, at this time. In Slovenia, they had a stamp of two skeletons having sex. Somebody sent me a letter from Slovenia. Who's from Slovenia? Did you ever see this stamp? A nation, yeah? Yeah, the nation's stamp. I couldn't believe that a government would print such a thing. And two skeletons, you know, going at it. If you could imagine such what it would look like, you know. And, you know, they put it on their national stamp. Weird.
Am I right?
No. This is the kind of gradual thing that happens. This is from Madhurya Kanamani, but I think it's like an Arta Nivritti. It's describing, you know, it gradually happens in an Arta Nivritti, and I'd have to check the book exactly and see if there's any specific reference. Expect that, yeah, from Nishta these things are destroyed, but we also know that at Nishta not all the Anarthas are destroyed. At Nishta, we have 75% or something thereabout is taken away. And so, therefore, even though a man may be Brahmanishta, he may be situated firmly in spirit, he may still have some Anartha left, which he may be slightly visible in his character. But the Acharyas say that even those Anarthas, they no longer act as obstacles on his path to bhakti. So this is, Nishta is called Madhyam. And in the Gaudiya mud, they have this term, they say this is the preliminary qualification for someone to accept disciples, that he should be at least on Nishta, which is reasonable to say. Because before Nishta, the person is so much pressed by his Anarthas that it's difficult for him to be effective as a counselor, preacher, and spiritual guide for someone. And especially if he's taking on all his karmas and more of his disciples' anarthas and mentalities and so forth, then it pushes him and it's very difficult.
To get cleared up,
then his real natural taste will come, become prominent.
When one develops a taste for his devotional service much more than any other activity, then he's at the stage of ruchi. And he, at that point, he has no fatigue in performing bhajan or kirtan or meditation, dhyan. He never feels sleepy because he's getting so much flavor, taste. Like if you're, you know, eating ice cream, you're not going to fall asleep because your tongue is enlivened by the taste, right? So similarly, when one comes to ruchi, he gets such a taste from his bhakti that he can't fall asleep while he's doing these things, when he's chanting and so forth. And there's two stages of ruchi. One is when the person is dependent upon the excellence of elements. Like when a person, he feels great taste when they're doing kirtan and the singer has a very nice voice, very sweet voice, and he's singing with many embellishments, and there's nice mridanga player, and everything is very nice. Or when there's a lecture being given and the person speaking very eloquently with some poetic metaphors and interesting way of expression, like this. Or deity worship, when there are many nice items of paraphernalia and everything's very clean, And there's all of the elements are very good. So then he gets some taste from these practices. Otherwise not. And this is considered to be some slight imperfection or some contamination in the person. Very slight, but nonetheless some contamination there. And then the higher stage is when the person is independent of the excellence of elements. In other words, anyone who starts chanting Hare Krishna immediately starts feeling some ecstasy. No matter if he's singing on key or a little flat or if the mandanga player is a little offbeat, he still gets some taste. But even that person gets a much higher taste when everything is right. In other words, he doesn't become like a robot or callous. He notices these things, and his taste increases when the elements are excellent, when the singer is good, when the speaker is good, and so forth. Then his in ecstasy increases. Nath Chakravarti Thakur says, when the devotee takes into his heart the golden medallion of bhakti, shining brightly by the fire of steady practice, then ruchi appears. When a person develops a taste for the acts of bhakti greater than attraction for anything else, that is called ruchi. Unlike previous stages, at ruchi, constant performance of devotional service, like hearing and chanting, does not cause even the least fatigue. Ruchi quickly produces an intense addiction to the acts of bhakti, like a boy who by daily study grasps the meaning and then takes pleasure in his study. Ignorance and anarthas and distractions are cleared up, then the natural, inherent taste for Krishna that's in the heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhikabunoy Shravanari Shurichite Koreya Udoy. It is awakened. And then when he chants Hare Krishna, he tastes ecstasy, he tastes attraction. And this is natural. So Krishna's like the sun, Krishna Surya Sama Mayahoya Andakar. Yahan Krishna Tahan Nahi Mayare Arikar. Well, wherever there is Krishna, sun, then Maya, darkness, cannot remain. So as we add Krishna to our life, then gradually the Maya goes away. The Maya is anarthas, and the anarthas are compared to like clouds in the sky. And they're blocking the Krishna sun, which is giving us light and warmth, which we need. And the holy name has unlimited light and unlimited heat. Then why is it that we don't get all of the light and heat? Because there are these clouds that are blocking the sunlight. These clouds of anarthas. But we know that even like today we see there's so many clouds, but it's bright outside because the sunshine's very powerful and it penetrates through the clouds. But when there's no clouds and it's clear, then you can get direct sunlight. Like from this area, on this side of the building, we can see that there's more direct sunlight coming. But when it's very cloudy, we don't see this. We just see, we can see, but it's not so bright. So when we're chanting, because we still have these anarthas surrounding us, therefore the holy name is blocked, or we're blocked from getting the effect of the holy name. But we still get some benefit from chanting Namabhas. We can get liberation, We can get freedom from material desires. We can become free from evil influences of planets and ghosts. So many things, which are good. But we cannot get prema or bhava from Namabhas, unfortunately. So what determines the amount of sun which is coming through our clouds? Because we cannot just erase our anarthas suddenly from the sky of our heart. Right? We can't just say, okay, I want to get the pure holy name. All of you anarthas, just go away, please. And holy name, please come and shine on me and let me get some nectar. It doesn't work like that. Because the anarthas are hanging there for a long time. So, what will determine the amount of sunshine that we will get through our clouds? And that is our concentration on the holy name. When we concentrate on the holy name, then we're getting the full amount that we can get in our present condition. We can't immediately change our condition, but we can change the potency of the holy name by our concentration on the holy name. The sun itself will burn away the clouds and mists, but it will be proportionate to the intensity of the sun. So our anarthas will be burned away in proportion to the care and attention in which we hear the holy name. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, adarat. We have to be very careful and attentive. We're inattentive because we lack taste. We have our tongue is afflicted with this avidya, this ignorance or jaundice. To push ourselves to be attentive. And we can talk about some practical things, how to be more attentive. I want to read something to you. This is a morning walk in Nairobi, given Prabhupada, morning walk, Brahmananda and some other devotees are there speaking with Srila Prabhupada. They're in Africa, right, Nairobi. November 2nd, 1975. Devotee asks, when chanting our 16 rounds, we are not sure if these rounds are sincere. Prabhupada, you should be sure. Devotee, how can we be sure? Prabhupada, there are beads. Brahmananda, no. He's saying when we chant our rounds, how can we be sure that when we chant the round, that the round is a perfect, attentive round, sincere. Prabhupada, therefore it is Shastra, you must. There is no question of understanding. Brahmananda, the quality of the chanting, he is asking. How can we make the quality the best? Prabhupada, quality you will understand. First of all, come to the quality. Without having quality, how he'll understand the quality? You follow the instructions of your spiritual master of the Shastra. That is your duty. Quality, no quality. It is not your position to understand. When the quality comes, there is no force. You will have a taste for chanting. You will desire at that time, why 16 rounds? Why not 16,000 rounds? That is quality. That is quality. It is by force. You'll not do it. Therefore, at least 16 rounds. But when you come to the quality, you will feel yourself, why 16? Why not 16,000? That is quality, automatically. Just like Haridas Thakur was doing. He was not forced to do. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he requested, now you are old enough, you can reduce. But he refused, no, up to the end of my life I shall go on. That is quality. Have you got such tendency that you will go on chanting and nothing to do? That is quality. Now you are forced to do. Where is the question of quality? That is given a chance there is given a chance so that one day you may come to the quality. Not that you have come to the quality. Quality is different. Atasakti. Asakti, attachment. Just like Rupa Goswami says, how shall I chant with one tongue? How shall I hear with two ears? Had I had millions of tongues and trillions of ears, then I could enjoy. This is quality. Quality is not so cheap. Maybe after many births. For the time being, you go on following the rules and regulations. It is being done by force. Where is the quality? So you wanted to understand quality? This is the quality. You'll not be forced. But automatically you'll desire. That is quality. I am writing books. I'm not being forced by anyone. Everyone can do that. Why one does not do it? Why I get up at night, 1 o'clock, and do this job? Because I cannot do it. I cannot do without it. Right? Prabhupada's saying how he wakes up in the morning to translate the books, and he says that, why do I do this? No one's forcing me, but I cannot live without this. It's my, you know, nectar. Like for us, we cannot live without taking prasadam. But Prabhupada, he was like, for him, waking up at 1 o'clock and translating, that was his prasadam. He was getting a lot of nectar from this. Because I cannot do without it, how one will do it artificially? This is quality. Therefore, they like my purports. The quality is shown by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shunyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Oh, I do not see Govinda. The whole world is vacant. Shunyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. This is quality. Just like we have a practical example. One man's beloved has died and he is seeing the whole world as vacant. Is it vacant? So that is quality of love. So there is no formula of quality. It has to be understood by himself. When you will feel so much ecstasy in chanting Hare Krishna, that is quality. By serving Vaishnavas, we get attracted to Krishna Katha. And by hearing Krishna Katha, we become attracted to Krishna and his associates gradually. And then one gradually begins to feel attraction to a certain name, a certain form of the Lord, or certain pastimes of the Lord. And this is when we begin our quality, when we become attracted to Krishna in a particular form. And that's knowledge. That's called sambandha gyan. Before that is ignorance. And that also means ignorance of our relationship with Krishna. We don't know what that is. When we start to have some slight sense of what is our relationship with Krishna, that is when the quality begins. And when we can chant with taste and we will remember Krishna and his pastimes with his devotees, the ones that attract us, then we can feel some separation. That is quality. And Prabhupada describes this in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, in the Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Shloka of Prahlad Maharaj. It's probably one of the longest purports in the Bhagavatam, something like 20 pages long. But there's one little part of it about Shravana, which is the first item. Shravanam, hearing of the holy name of the Lord, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the nine processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name is the beginning. Indeed, it's essential, and as enunciated by Mahaprabhu, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. By chanting, one is cleansed of material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of the heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform of understanding the personal form of the Lord. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And when one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. In this way, a devotee advances further and further toward complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form and qualities, his paraphernalia and everything pertaining to him. Therefore, the chronological process is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. This same process of chronological understanding holds true in chanting and remembering. When the chanting of the holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia is heard from the mouth of a pure devotee, his hearing and chanting are very pleasing. Srila Sanatana Goswami has forbidden us to hear the chanting of an artificial devotee or non-devotee. Hearing from the text of Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name, and therefore chanting and hearing of the Bhagavatam is transcendentally full of mellows. The transcendental holy name of the Lord may be heard and chanted according to the attraction of the devotee. One may chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, or one may chant the holy name of Lord Ram or Nrisingadev. The Lord has innumerable forms and names, and devotees may meditate on a particular form and chant the holy name according to his attraction. So at the stage of Ruchi, one is attracted to a particular form. The best course is to hear the holy name, form, and so on from a pure devotee of the same standard as oneself. In other words, one who is attached to Krishna should chant and hear from other pure devotees who are also attached to Lord Krishna. The same principle applies for devotees attracted by Lord Ram, Lord Nrisingha, and other forms of the Lord. Because Krishna is the ultimate form, it is best to hear about Lord Krishna's name, form, pastimes from a realized devotee who is particularly attracted by the form of Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, great devotees like Shukadev Goswami have specifically described Lord Krishna's holy name, form, and qualities. Unless one hears about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord, one cannot clearly understand the other processes of devotional service. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that one chant the holy name of Krishna, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtana. If one is fortunate enough to hear from the mouth of realized devotees, he is very easily successful on the path of devotional service. Therefore, hearing of the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential. Sridhar Swami has remarked that a pure devotee takes advantage of another pure devotee by trying to hear from him about the holy name, form, qualities of the Lord. If there is no such opportunity, he alone chants and hears the Lord's holy name. In both of these places, Prabhupada's describing coming to the platform of ruchi or quality when there's some taste and some attraction to the Lord's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And that's what this verse is talking about. Any questions? I've been pushing for 23 years. And I don't think that I'm at the stage of ruchi yet, as far as I can perceive. Well, that's one reason why Rupa Goswami says utsahan nischaya dharyat. One must be very patient and dharyat, or tirpenya. Right? Now Prabhupada said that yes, spiritual life is difficult, but material life is impossible. So it's true, and it's not easy to continue pushing our material nature and no one said it's going to be easy. Although it's a simple process, it takes a lot of energy and concentration. It's the practice of yoga. And everywhere it's mentioned that it's a gradual process. It takes a long time. One has to hear and chant for a long time. And one has to perform nishkam karma for a long time before his heart begins to become cleared from millions of births of sins and anarthas and attachments. So this is what one would have to say to such a person, that you have to realize that, you know, you've been in a disease condition for millions of births, and after 10 years it's not such a long time. Like Maharaj was saying in the class, that 20-25 years is a very small time. It's just like a moment. One has to broaden one's vision a bit and see what is the reality of the situation. And the other reality, Prabhupada stressed that, you know, material life is impossible. Although what we're doing is difficult, that's true. But material life is just horrible. There's no even hope for happiness. At least we have some hope that once we get the car rolling, you know, we can jump in and we'll get some taste. But, you know, the karmis, it's just all uphill. They never get any. It's just they're suffering constantly. Maya is kicking them 24 hours a day. You say, well, why does he have no taste? Well, Krishna gives taste right from the beginning to everybody. Shraddha means there's some taste. Otherwise, he wouldn't have become attracted and so many things. He must have had some taste. But sometimes, because of offenses, the moon of bhakti wanes. The full moon becomes Ardha Chandra. Purna Chandra becomes Ardha Chandra, and then it becomes just a sliver, and then finished. Then it's all gone. When we offend Vaishnavas, then our taste just merely begins to recede. And this is generally the cause of our taste drying up to the point where we don't even feel like trying anymore. This is generally the problem. Because if someone's humble, then he can chant and he'll have some taste. But if the person's a little proud or if he's offensive, then his taste will disappear. The eradication of the anarthas begins at Bhajana Kriya. It becomes partial and then expansive. And then I brought my own water. And you can just pour that back in. I just want to put my water. The vritti begins here. As soon as you begin chanting regularly, regular service, they just begin. So they start side by side. And this is a long stage. It goes through the anishtita, bhajana kriya, then nishtita. And then he still has these five distractions. Yeah, nishtita. He still has these five distractions. Once he gets rid of these five distractions, then he comes to nishtha. So anartha nivritti kind of, once it starts from here, and when it ends, he's at nishtha. Kind of carries him and then drops him off at nishtha. But he has to go through these last five things. 75% of the anarthas are finished. Crushing his heart. you know, to the point where he's tempted to commit sin. But in Nishta, he's not, that temptation is not there any longer because of those. They may, the things may come subtly in the mind and then they just go. And the, they don't disturb him. Whereas in the lower stage, when they come into the mind, they, the effect of that meditation disturbs him for days afterwards. He's asking about devotee at a higher stage, at say Ruchi or Sakti, right? Who may fall down. Or Nishta, who may fall down feeling tempted by some sinful activities. Well, I mean, at the anartha and nivritti, before Nishta, the anarthas are still crushing the heart. They're very powerful. So therefore, the impulse or the force of the temptation towards sin is much more stronger. But at Nishta, because the force has been taken out of these things, the impulse, the temptation, although there may be still there, but the power of it has been nullified or to such a degree, 75% of the punch of the temptation has been taken away, right? So, I mean, the temptations are always, you know, around us, but they no longer, you know, affect the person with such strength. So when the person comes to Nishta, generally, he can control himself a lot easier than when he was struggling with all these anarthas. That's the main difference. It's just a matter of strength. At Nishta, it's much more easy to deal with all these things. And they're just kind of like subtle. That's like, I'll give it in the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, there's another way of looking at this whole thing. Patanjali describes,
I think you'll just find this thing. The four levels of virakti. The first one is kind of gross. I forget the Sanskrit. I'll just try to describe it. The first level is gross, when the person's trying to really just kind of grab his senses from the sense objects and physically keep them separate. You know, like he stays away, far away from women. If he sees a woman walk, he walks on the other side of the road, you know. And some devotees, you know, they also, when they see some sweets, they say, oh, no, Prabhu, no, it's okay. They, you know, they have to stay away from these things because they're very, this powerful attraction between the senses and the object. So there's a kind of gross physical detachment, pulling his senses away from the objects. This is the first level. Right? Therefore, it's recommended that new bhaktas, they shouldn't go on the marathon, or they shouldn't be allowed to go and see their old friends, because their old friends offer them some marijuana or something, and then they can't help themselves. Then the second one is kind of like carefully watching the mind. Because now you've separated your senses from the sense objects, but the mind is still flying back to those things. So he has to be he has to actually diligently watch his mind, observe his mind, to make sure when he sees himself going back for the objects, he's got to pull it back. So it's kind of like on the mental platform. This is on the gross, and this is like on the mental platform. And then the third one is when he's done that for a long time, to the degree that he's able to control his internal senses. The mind has become pretty much controlled. But there's still some curiosity. Parma Purna? He's controlled the mind, but
sometimes there's a slight thought, I wonder what it would be like to do like this. Some slight kind of thought, very subtle. I wonder what it would be like to be with her. Huh? Nah, forget about it. That's stupid. Right? Just a little slight kind of curiosity.
And then the fourth level is nothing left. No even curiosity. So he describes this
for the yogi.
A Madhyam Adhikari doesn't fall down. And Uttam Adhikari never falls down. So that he doesn't say the Madhyam Adhikari never falls down, but he says he doesn't. It means generally he doesn't. So the person, when it comes to the third stage, yeah, generally he doesn't fall down. Of course, if you think, you know, nowadays, in the last few years, we've had some of our leaders fall down. So then you may say, well, it looks like it's not general, the general principles aren't being applied here. No, they are, but also Kali Yuga has become more difficult. The powers of Kali are strengthened more and more. So the devotee has to be more careful. Even at the stage of Nishtha, or even Ruchi, devotees have to be very careful about Sadhu Sangha, and especially Sadhu Ninda, which some of the leaders that in recent couple of years, these were the main things, that they didn't keep association with devotees, or they criticized Vaishnavas. On their own admission, they said these things. So this, because at the stage of Nishtha, even though you may be pretty, you know, by and large, beyond all of the anarthas, but unless you keep very strict sangha with real strong devotees and you give up sadhu ninda, then if you don't do that, then you can easily fall down. There's no guarantee. I mean, that, particularly those two things. If we're not careful about these two things, no matter if we're nishtha or rucha or even asakti, we can fall down very easily. Anything else? It's 4:30. This one is called Material Life is Like Jaundice. And that is from page 66 to 68. The second portion is called The Holy Name is the Medicine. And that's from page 68 to 70. In that section, Prabhupada describes the three stages of chanting: the offensive, clearing, and pure stage. And then the last is called the stages of bhakti, from page 70 to 72. And there Prabhupada gives a summary of the stages of bhakti from Shraddha up to Bhava. And in there he says, at Bhava, Maya cannot disturb one. Because at Bhava, one becomes Uttamadhikari above the modes of nature, and Maya cannot touch him then. Then he cannot fall down. And I also wanted to mention, once Prabhupada said that it took me 30 years to chant properly. So the practice of chanting takes many years to develop. And we have to be willing to invest more than just 10 years of practice of bhakti yoga. There's another thing you could have told your friend, right? Prabhupada spent 30 years. He said it took him to perfect his chanting. So how can we expect that we're going to do it in 10 years? Right? It's very logical. Therefore, we have to be very patient and just continue and push ourselves till we get to nishta, and then still be very careful until ruchi appears. And when we find that there's this automatic attraction and that we're never fatigued in classes or in japa or in gayatri, like that. And then, so then we know that we're developing taste, and then we can push forward in a different way. Until that point, we have to push ourselves in another kind of way. All right, so we'll stop now. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki.